This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. It's January 14th, episode 1082. Good morning, Horse World.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Hey, everyone. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day, baby. Here's to another week. Halfway done. Downhill stretch has finally begun.
Daddy, I want another pony.
What do they call Wednesday hump day anyhow? Innocuous jibber jabber.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on Horses in the Morning this morning. Jamie, I have tragic news for you out of Australia that just is breaking.
Oh, no.
Let me read this article that just came out about 3 hours ago. Today is a national day of mourning. At 11:30 a.m. on Wednesday, a tram carrying up to 30 people and a truck carrying beer collided in the Melbourne suburb of Parkville. It left 50 kegs of beer from the Carlton and United Brewery strewn across the road and footpath in the terrible tragedy. Paramedics arrived to find the tram extensively damaged and beer kegs from the truck strewn across the road. Luckily, only two people suffered minor injuries when the tram derailed. They assessed the scene and no one was seriously hurt. However, the beer is a different matter.
The tram.
I know. And you know what was the funny part about this article was the tweets that accompanied it from the different people tweeting about it. Here's a couple of them. And you know how Australians like their beer. They could have cared less how many people died in the tram. They just cared that the truckload of beer was all over the road. A tram has attacked a truck full of beer kegs. Australians demand apology from all trams. Here's another one. Sad day. Beer truck collides with tram in Melbourne. Humans all okay. Beer critical. Bring mugs. And then the last one. Tram beer truck accident. All pretzel vendors to the scene immediately.
People had too much fun.
They like their beer in Australia.
It was very sad. Very
a tragedy. Sad. They showed pictures and these kegs of beer were all over the road. The truck had tipped over and there were kegs everywhere. Now the tram was pretty smashed up in the front. It's one of those that goes on rails, you know. And yeah, it was pretty smashed up. But I wonder if the truck, they did not say whether the beer truck driver was drunk, and that's why he was in the way of the tram. I didn't say that, so I don't know.
I would imagine that in Australia, you probably DUI is encouraged. Like, you're Australian. You just drive drunk. That's what they do.
If you're sober, you get a ticket.
I know. It's like you're causing drama for everybody else. If you're sober, you're like the only one. Just kidding, Australia.
Yeah, you're we're awesome. Just kidding. But great article.
Sad, though. Very sad.
It is sad. It is sad. Well, Jennifer, what is coming up on today's show?
On today's Crappy List Wednesday edition, once our capable co-hosts have exhausted their list of brow-furrowing horsey headlines, we head off for a heaping helping of horse nutrition with Dr. Tanya Cubitt. And in the third half of the show, Kathy Hansen from the AQHA Protect Them Coalition stops by to talk about how this ever-growing group of concerned citizens is out to make AQHA competitions better for horses and humans alike. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Daily Winnie time. Happy birthday to Mary Kitzmiller. It's her birthday today, and she will be here tomorrow. She's hosting the show for the monthly Mary Kitzmiller episode on training baby horses and things. So she'll be here tomorrow. But have a happy birthday today, Mary.
All right, so you guys know I'm heading to California this coming weekend. I'm going to be broadcasting live from Galway Downs. It's not a competition. It's the cross-country schooling. They do a 2 days. It's a fundraiser. I get to ride with James Atkinson, and I'm going to be galloping cross-country for 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. So the cool thing is I'm going to California. The uncool thing is that my horses are ill-prepared to look like those beautiful California horses are going to look. So I busted out my Andis Show Edge clippers last night. And, oh, my God, first of all, these clippers are awesome. Number one, they just go straight to the hair. My little system with the Show Sheen and baby oil is awesome. I bathed Edward. You know, I had to walk him around because it was a little chilly, dried him, Show Sheened him, and then clipped him. And he looks amazing on at least one side. Because
your blades, you got dull blades on the second side?
No, it got dark, and I had to finish, and he's black. So at least one side is amazing. He looks so beautiful. And then the other side I'll have to test when the sun comes up because it was really late last night when I finished clipping him. So have you ever done that where, like, I did one of those, I did a full body clip on him, but I left, like, the little saddle pad, the square pad of hair over his back. I've never full body clipped anything. I've always just done the trace clips. But I'm going to California. He needed to look amazing. So I did the full body clip, but I'm pretty sure the saddle pad that I left is going to be incredibly lopsided, and the Show Edge clippers may have to be busted out again today because it could be awesome or it could be a disaster.
You know what's key with that one, Jamie? You have to make sure your clipped saddle pad is smaller than your real saddle pad, and then nobody knows.
You know, you say that, and I'm going to start to even it up, and that saddle pad's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller until it just covers the withers, because I keep trying to even it up.
It's going to be a half pad.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I predict she'll be shaving it all off before she's done. It's going to be all hell with it.
It may be awesome, Glenn. You don't know. It may be beautiful. It may be perfect.
Is
it going to
be as
it.
Good as Jill there from Ireland and her clips? Is it going to be as good as Jill's?
Yeah, no, not at all. I actually thought about maybe I should leave something carved in him, and I realized that I have absolutely zero artistic talent and would not be leaving anything in him because it would just be people would ride by and be like, "What is that?" I'm like, "It's a pile of
what
throw
is that
up.
Blob on his butt?"
Yeah, exactly. It's a pile of throw up.
That's funny. Well, I thought you were going to say when you started that conversation, I wasn't expecting clipping. I thought you were going to say, and my horses are ill-prepared, fat, and not ready for this at all. That's what I actually thought you were going to say.
Well, fortunately, Edward is off-the-track thoroughbred and a very hard keeper, so he's never fat. That's the good news. The bad news is he just looked like a ragamuffin, and it's, you know, he lives mainly outdoors here, and so I didn't want to clip him because then I have to blanket him all the time. So he's dirty, and he's filthy, and we got irrigation. I told you guys it's been raining, and it's just like a total mud ball, and he's fuzzy, and he's like the full beard going on, and so he looked terrible, and I just realized I needed to step up my game a little bit if he's going to go to California. And it must look good, at least half of it, because when Chad walked in last night, he goes, "Ooh, he looks like a California horse." Because I'm kidding you. They don't even clip them. They keep them blade. They didn't even grow hair out there. It's amazing. So he looks beautiful. He's going to almost fit right in with his lopsided saddle pad.
Well, there you go. Well, that's good. It sounds like fun. Now, you're going to be coming to us from California on Friday morning, right?
I plan on it. Chad is leaving to go play golf, so we may have to end it early because he's got a tea time. You know, it's all about compromises in a marriage, okay?
Well, yeah, and how often do you get to play golf in Southern California? So I can see the rationale there.
Absolutely.
Well, you did a post on Monday when we did the show. It was a question of the day. If your horse is lying flat out, does the little part of you have a panic attack? And I'll tell you what, you got some comments. That was a popular post. It was interesting to see that. I would say, 99% of people do have panic attacks when they see their horses, even though we're horse people and we know that, you know, they're just sleeping. We know that, you know, but your heart still does a little, you know, pitty-patter. And I was surprised at the number of people who actually went outside to check.
Glenn, I posted that because during the song, you know, I can see my horses out my window here. And during the song that we were playing that day, I walked outside and Joey looked like he was dead in the field. And of course, I'm like, hey. And he puts his head up, like basically flips me off and then lays back down. And so I'm like, okay, well, good, he's alive. But yes, I would say that pretty much 100% of people said that they would go check their horse. I mean, one person said if they're rolling, they're only if they're rolling does she go check him. And I'm like, well, if they're laying flat out and not moving, you probably go check them too. So Lisa Tomczyk said that she goes after going through two colic surgeries with a mare, she now yells their name out whenever they lay flat out. And I love this line. She says, "Colic experiences put paranoia in one's soul," and that's so true.
That is so true. That's true. Or if you've had some of the bizarre accidents we've had over the years, the more horses you have, the more bizarre accidents you end up having. And I do it too. I sit here in the studio and I can see the horses outside here. And I went out this morning with my dog and my pony was laying flat out. And it's like first thing in the morning when your pony's laying flat out, that's an extra concern because it's like, oh, I don't know what happened overnight, you know? So
yeah, exactly.
I walk over and, you know, he puts his head up and, you know, same thing. He puts his head up and goes, "What are you waking me up for?" So yeah. He probably had just laid down. But yeah, that got a good response. That was that was a good post. That was a good question of the day.
You know, sure, that when a veterinarian posts on there that even she does it, that you know we're not too far off.
Yeah, Dr. Wendy posted, "Yes, I check." So, yep. Well, a couple things here. Let's start out with the Calder Casino thing, because we've been meaning to cover this for a month now, and we haven't gotten to it. And they had a new thing that happened yesterday. This is in Miami. It's Calder Casino. And can you explain? You've been following the story. Can you explain it to us?
Yeah, I'll try. So at Calder Casino, Calder is owned by Churchill Downs. And Churchill Downs has leased a lot of the stalls for racing to Calder to keep the horses in training. It was about 400 horses in training. So Churchill Downs is like, "That's it. We're done. I want all of you out of here." About 200 left, and about 200 had nowhere to go. These owners and trainers, they can't find a boarding room. I don't know. They can't leave. So Calder begs Churchill Downs, "Please let us keep these horses here. They have nowhere to go." So Churchill Downs like puts barricades up and is like, "If you get out, you don't get out, you're going to be arrested." Well, Calder ends up renting some temporary portable stalls and putting all the horses in the parking lot. So a bunch of racehorses are standing on rubber mats in the parking lot because they're not allowed to go back to the barns. And what they were being allowed to train for a while, I'm not quite sure if they're being allowed to train right now. Well, they were evicted. They want to tear everything down to make room for development, of course. Well, unfortunately, the rain hasn't stopped down in Florida, and there is a huge flood of the parking lot. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever been to a horse show where the temporary stables flood. It sucks, and there's nothing you can do about it because the water just rushes right in, and these horses, apparently these racehorses, have been standing in 6 inches of water since all of this water started. So the kind of most recent update is Calder was like, "Churchill Downs, you guys are big a-holes. I want these horses back in the stalls." So Churchill Downs allowed the racehorses just yesterday to go back to their old stables because the stables are fine, but they want to get all the horses out of there. And what Calder wants to do is they just want to rent the stalls again. They want to re-up their lease. And Churchill Downs is like, "Nope," which you would think that, I mean, my personal opinion coming in here, that Churchill Downs is a racing entity, not a gambling entity, but they want to be more on the gambling side and not on the racing side. So I guess the parent company is just like, "Hey, sure, you guys, get out. We're going to make more money on casinos." Did I explain it well? Hello?
Yeah, Glenn put himself on mute.
That.
You didn't realize
sorry
it.
Sorry about
yeah.
that. Yeah.
There we go.
You did explain it well, and I think that about that about covers it. And you're absolutely positively right. It's all about casinos now. The horses are an afterthought. And that's going to continue being that way.
Ooh, that's a surprise. Wow. Didn't see that coming.
Who saw that coming? Yeah, who saw that coming when we put casinos in? We were in Daytona Beach, I guess. We went to the Greyhound track, and they have poker rooms at the Greyhound track. They don't have full-blown casinos. They have poker rooms. And you walk through, it was very sad, you walk through the corridor to get to where the track is, and Greyhound tracks are tiny compared to horse tracks, to where the track is, and it's kind of a rundown area like your typical old track, you know, we've all been to. But when you walk through, it's very nice, and then on left and right, you see the huge poker rooms that are, you know, crowded, standing room only with people. And then you get to the track, and there's three people watching dogs go around. So, I think that's the way it is, you know, with all kinds of racing now, not just horses. But, yep, people want to bet. They don't want to play the dogs and ponies as much anymore.
Too much work. You can just play war.
exactly.
Yeah, higher. Ace, yes. Hey, before we move on, I just want to make everybody aware. I know you guys are not Costco shoppers, but I am. I'm a huge Costco shopper. And there's kind of something going on right now that I just want you guys to be aware of. The Kirkland pet food, which is actually Diamond brand pet food, is they put the Kirkland label on it. I haven't seen any complaints about the Diamond, but the Kirkland, people are starting to rumble. A lot of dogs are getting sick. And just from the past couple weeks of eating and buying new bags of dog food, there's no recall. It's not official yet. But reading the reviews on Consumer Affairs, they're all very recent complaints of, like, dogs like with bloody diarrhea, death, all sorts of really bad stuff, vomiting and gagging. So if you guys are noticing anything like that and you feed Kirkland, please, obviously, you've probably already been to the vet, but stop feeding the food. And if you have just bought a bag, why don't you just wait and not feed it for a while and see if there's a recall that's going to happen? Apparently, all these dogs that have been sick, all these people have contacted Costco, and they're like, we'll refund the money that, you know, for what's left over in the bag. But there's no official recall yet. So just wanted to let y'all be aware that there potentially could be a problem with it. You know, dealing with all the stuff with the horses that have been eating the bad food and waiting to die. I just wanted to stay ahead of this one, just in case.
All right. You know, there one of the things that popped up about 50 different times in our news feed this morning was a Montana bill that they're trying to put through the legislature there to protect police horses. Apparently, they don't have the same law in place that a lot of the other states have, where if you attack a police horse, that it's a criminal penalty. So I saw this. This really was popping up everywhere. Margie McDonald introduced a bill, representative there, to the House Judiciary Committee on Monday. It said it would protect police horses. And those used in search and rescue, it says it will raise awareness, blah, blah, blah. Under the bill, someone convicted of harming police or a police horse or search and rescue horse could serve up to a year in prison, face a fine of $50,000 or $5,000. Now, what it says in the last sentence of the article is Livingston police officer Jessica Kynett says her horse Larry is the only police horse in the state. They have one. So,
wow. Oh, my gosh.
I saw this article about 50 different places, and I'm going, it's for one horse. Granted, I think the law should be there because, you know, sometime in the future, Montana might have two. I just thought that was funny.
And I also Montana want to give a bill to protect police horse introduced.
Horse, yeah. maybe poor Jessica's been riding her horse and people have been attacking. I don't know. I don't know if she's had a problem there in Livingston, but, you know, it's not a bad thing that we get the bill in the first place. I also want to give a shout-out. I should have done a Daily Whinny to Paul May, who's been on our driving radio show many times, and he's a super nice guy. He won the, I forget what they call this class. it doesn't really say in the article either, but it's a speed class for driving, and it's indoors, and you go through a maze of traffic cones and gates and obstacles and things like that, and they go fast. I mean, super fast. This is a timed event, and he won it at the Pennsylvania Farm Show. It's a big deal there. That's one of the most watched things every year at the Pennsylvania Farm Show. So good to him for winning that, and congratulations to our friend Paul for doing that. It's sort of like scurry racing. You know, it's kind of our version of that. And then one other thing here that I wanted to cover quick that I thought you and Jennifer especially would get a kick out of because you love this kind of stuff. And that is that in China, you know, they've been having a lot of archaeological discoveries here recently that we've been talking about. But in China, they found a 2,800-year-old burial site that was filled with 98 horses and 28 chariots. It was, they dated it back to 770 BC, and it was known as the summer and autumn period in Chinese history. And it's at the time in Chinese history when you know, you had the high-ranking nobles and the kings and the whatever they called them in those days. But it also was a time when merchants started to come into being, and wealthy merchants started to come into being during that time. Trade and commerce was starting to happen with Europe. And a sign and a symbol of your status as a wealthy person or a noble was how many chariots you owned. So they do think that this was a burial thing, that it was around one of these people had died. The pit that they discovered was 108 feet in length and 4 meters wow. wide. It had more than two dozen chariots, some of them with the wheels removed, and the parts of chariots were also placed alongside of it, I assume so they could fit it in a hole. And then they found a separate hole that had the 98 horses buried. And when I actually saw some pictures of this, these horses looked like some of them were not skin and bones. Some of them, some of them were not just bones. They had the skin on them and everything. It was kind of eerie looking at the picture. Yeah, it was. I don't know whether they bombed or what they did, but it was kind of eerie looking. They said that it was interesting too that the horses were neatly laid back to back on their sides. And that meant that it was that they were horses used as teams to pull the chariots. If you found a horse that was just laid there by himself and not back to back, it meant that he was a single horse used to pull a chariot. So it was just fascinating stuff that they discovered in China here.
Interesting. Did you read? I was looking for the news story right now that some dude in Ohio found. It didn't really say why he was digging in his neighbor's backyard. Maybe they were putting in a pool or something. He dug up a mammoth in his neighbor's backyard in Ohio. And
what?
A mammoth, like a prehistoric mammoth?
Woolly mammoth? Like a woolly mammoth type animal. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's older, related to an elephant, but older. And he found it, and like he dug up all these bones, and I'm sure people are cringing that we're archaeologists. He like took the bones to a school and like let kids hold them and pass the bones around and all this.
Don't tell.
Well, I'm sure he didn't think it was from something prehistoric, you know.
Yeah. He's like, hey, I just let you know who's ever gonna get a chance to pass around prehistoric bones. So I just thought the kids would like to see it. So. Just a guy digging in his neighbor's backyard. I'm going to find that story before the show's over, and I'll let you know what exactly it was.
Well, did you hear this? I just remembered this. Did you hear 2 days ago that a guy in New York went and claimed the $386 million lottery that was won back in November?
No.
He's 80 years old. He's a retired school principal. And he had the ticket and apparently, you know, discovered that he had the ticket. He went to the lawyers, waited a while now to claim it, but he wanted to get all his ducks in a row, which good for him, right? But, yeah, he ends up with a $126 million lump sum check after taxes. Not too bad.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yep, not too bad. And it was his wife's fault that It was actually two reasons that he bought the tickets. He doesn't normally, apparently. It was pouring down rain, and his wife was sick of having him drive through the rain because apparently he just goes too fast when he drives in the rain. So she made him pull off at a truck stop. They pulled off the truck stop, and he ran in to get something to drink or something and just happened to buy the tickets while he was in there. And that's how he ended up winning the lottery for
136. Oh, my gosh. So this is going to be one of those persons that doesn't make it on the show of how everybody screwed up and went broke, because he actually, it sounds like he kind of got himself together.
Well, yeah, but who knows? That changes after you get the money, right? Who knows? Fire that lawyer, yeah. Spend the money. I mean, you know,
okay.
There you go.
I found the story.
All right.
Michigan contractor finds 14,000-year-old mastodon skeleton in his neighbor's backyard. He dug up 42 bones from the prehistoric creatures. The bones are going to be donated to a local museum, but they're keeping a couple pieces for themselves. It's like rednecks that find something like that. Like, hey, it'll be all right.
Well, that's funny. Who knew? I guess they got to be hiding somewhere, right?
They donated him to a museum, but he's like, hey, you know, he took him to the school and let kids like spend the day taking a look at them and holding them and passing them around and stuff. And he's like, once these things get to the museum and get crated up, you're not going to get to touch them again. So, you know, it was life-changing for the kids.
Well, that time already. We have to get to our commercial and our first interview. This one Jennifer had a chance to do yesterday. Unfortunately, Dr. Cubitt is with Dr. Tanya Cubitt, and her daughter are both sick with pneumonia. So she couldn't do it this morning, but she managed to get it recorded yesterday while she had some help. Dr. Cubitt is a native of Queensland, Australia. She's been on our show, I don't know if this show, but other shows years ago and been really around since the beginning of the Horse Radio Network. She completed her Master of Science and Doctor of Philosophy degrees in Equine Nutrition and Reproduction at Virginia Tech. She's a wealth of knowledge on nutrition as it relates to reproduction and a background that includes all aspects of equine farm management. She's a great speaker and she's fun to listen to. So we're going to try and get her on. I think that Jennifer can confirm this once a month. Is that what we're shooting for with Dr. Cubitt?
Yes, once a month.
Okay. What we're trying to do is make sure that we get a health segment every Wednesday like we have in our past. So we're going to – Jennifer's working really hard. Getting vets lined up is like pulling teeth. So she's working really hard to make that happen and get an interesting health segment every Wednesday. And, you know, for those health segments, I did keep this around. So I have I'm not going to delete that. That's going to stay in our repertoire of things. So let's take a listen as Jennifer talks to Dr. Tanya Cubitt right after this word from Equestrian Collection. Hi, Glenn here, and I have Debbie with me from Equestrian Collections in 2015, and we have some terrific new products to talk about this year, and we're going to start with RJ Classics.
Hi, Glenn. Happy New Year to you and all of our listeners. The first product of the year that I want to talk about is the RJ Classics Prestige Wrap Collar Show Shirt in plus sizes. It's time to be looking forward to the spring show season, and we now have some plus-size shirts, show shirts in stock and ready to ship in sizes 48 through 50, and they are so cute. They're not – sometimes those plus-size riders, we have some problems finding anything that's interesting and cute, and we had these brought in for us. We have three different colors. The cutest one of all, there's a white one, and on the inside of the collar are flamingos. Wanted to remind, since you're in Florida, I'm going to mention the flamingos on the inside of the cuff and collar. And they're placket fronts. They're, of course, machine wash, or you can dry clean them, whatever you prefer. And they are a stretchable, breathable fabric, so they're going to be perfect for the show season coming up in the spring. We have them available ready to ship, and we have a lavender color with some inside a little design inside, and the white one with the flamingos, and white one with some pink designs on the inside. They're only $89.95, which is really a terrific price for a show shirt and one in sizes that you can't always find. So even if you already have show shirts and you're in those plus sizes, take a look at these because you're probably going to want to snap up a couple of them so that you'll have something fresh and new to wear this season.
And I'm really happy to see a lot of people may not, new listeners may not realize that that Equestrian Collections really started with plus sizes with 1824 and started with plus sizes many years ago, didn't you?
That's exactly right. And all throughout our line, we have always looked for out for the plus-size riders in everything that we can find because we are 1824. A lot of people know us from that, but that's been years and years and years ago. But we still have that on our site, and we still cater to the plus-size rider. So really, truly, look at these shirts. They are super cute.
When I met you guys back in the 90s, it was 1824. Still, I mean, that's how long ago it was that I first got to know Chris and Equestrian Collections.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's equestriancollections.com. You want to hop on there, just search for RJ Classics Prestige, and it'll pop up. And there's color choices and all kinds of options there. So check it out, RJ Classics Prestige Wrap Collar Shirts.
And welcome back to the Horses in the Morning Show, Dr. Cubitt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're pre-recording our little event here today so that Dr. Cubitt can care for her her little one. You have a little one. How old is he now?
He's one. I've made it through a whole 12 months.
Is he mobile, running around, crawling around the house, to getting into mischief?
Crawling, so close to walking, but I feel like I've been saying that for the last 3 weeks.
Now, are you excited about walking or are you dreading walking?
Well, I'm excited, but then everybody says, oh, your life is over. I like to put it, my life is going to change.
Well, yes, it will change. You will become quicker off the mark. You will be able to sprint across the room to save that child in a millisecond.
Oh, gosh, I can only imagine. But it's been different and it's been exciting and I'm happy.
Well, we're thrilled that you're taking a little time out of your day to care for your little one to answer some questions for us today. And today it's all about proteins. What the heck are they and why do I care?
Proteins, and I'm so glad we're talking about this topic because protein is so, so very important and it really gets a bad rap. There are a lot of myths about protein out there, so I want to dispel a couple of those as well as just talk about what on earth is protein. So what is it? It makes up about 15% of our body, with most in the muscle. It has key functions, including transporting nutrients in the bloodstream, metabolic functions, helps as a part of your immune system, also helps to minimize and buffer pH levels. And it's made up of small units called amino acids. And lysine, which most of our listeners have probably heard of, is often the most lacking in our equine diets. And it's also the only one we actually have a true requirement for. And we call lysine an essential nutrient. And when we use that term correctly in equine nutrition, it means that the horse can't make it or synthesize it in its body. It has to consume it in its diet. So it really has to eat feed sources that are very high in those quality amino acids like lysine. And those ingredients would be things like soybean meal, which is a legume, or alfalfa, which is also a legume.
Interesting. Now, just this is where the conversations frequently take a left-hand turn. So if you are a feral horse, you're a Mustang wandering around the wilds of Montana, they obviously are not given any food that would contain extra lysine. How does he survive? Because he's got to get it somewhere. Are there naturally occurring food sources that have sufficient quantities so that an animal can subsist? Is that kind of how it works?
Absolutely. I mean, there are weeds that are also legumes out in the wild. You've also got to think, because I commonly get this question, well, horses in the wild did fine without that and without us. They also probably have a life expectancy between, let's say, 7 to 12 years.
Good point, yeah.
We're expecting our horses to live 30 years. and they reproduce. They only run away from predators. They don't have to jump and exercise, and they have a wide variety of different forages, shrubs, weeds, grasses in the wild that they can chew on. So, and our domesticated horses typically in a lot of places aren't getting a lot of access to pasture. If they are, maybe it's not very green pasture. Or anyway, horses in the wild, lots of access to different types of forages.
And a very different lifestyle.
So exactly.
We can't compare domesticated horses and wild horses and expect them to have the same requirements for those that essential amino acid. So step
You're
one.
You're exactly right.
They need it, and they're not all built the same. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got that part.
When it comes to looking at how much, looking at how much a horse needs, everybody is aware that a young growing horse needs a lot more protein for growth, because really what you're doing as a young animal or a young human is you're laying down tissue, laying down muscle, and that, as I just mentioned, is primarily protein. So quality protein is absolutely critical for a young growing animal. Despite one of the myths you may have heard that high protein diets cause developmental orthopedic disease or problems with joints in foals. That is an absolute myth. And it was a study done back in the 1970s in Great Dane dogs, actually, that implicated excess protein in causing these growth disorders. But subsequent studies have revealed there's no relationship between high protein diets and growth disorders. And both protein and energy are absolutely critical for proper growth and bone maturation. And other studies have shown that bone turnover is depressed in horses that aren't fed an adequate protein diet, so a low protein diet. So the old recommendation, if your horse has growth problems, to take all the feed away and it's protein that's causing it, is really incorrect. And we absolutely, whilst we may take away some of the energy because we don't want these horses overweight, we absolutely need to make sure we're giving them quality protein sources to help support the growth, along with adequate vitamins and minerals to help support the growth.
So if feeding quote, high protein diet to a young horse is not directly going to cause an orthopedic disease, can withholding protein, in other words, feeding a young growing horse dramatically insufficient amounts of protein, can that cause growth problems?
We haven't done the studies to directly say if you withhold protein, you will cause developmental orthopedic disease. But we have done enough studies to show that not feeding adequate amounts of quality protein is detrimental to bone strength and growth. So while it's not directly related to an actual disorder, the whole goal of breeding and growing young foals is strong, healthy bones, because they have to, throughout the rest of their 30 years, put up with the rigors of maybe it's a racehorse and then it's going to be a show hunter and then it's going to work in a riding program. So it's got to be working a lot of its life, and we really need to make sure we're developing really strong bones.
Do we have any data yet at this point? I don't know if anybody's ever taken the time to study it, whether or not a young horse who has been deprived of those nutrients for an extended period of time, for example, someone who adopts a 4 or 5 year old horse that was a starvation case when it was a baby. Do we know if there are long-term effects on the horse's skeletal system, specifically their skeletal system, because of that, or hasn't anybody had the ability to study that yet?
You know, long-term studies in horses are always difficult because they're very expensive, but that is certainly something that I would say quite possible. We know that in young horses, especially actually go further to even before they're born in utero, that if mares are malnourished or starved during pregnancy, that we definitely have issues with the growth of the young horse or the development of the young horse. We know that about people. So certainly you could make that assumption that a malnourished young horse, as it goes through its life, is just going to have more issues overall.
Yeah, it's just more likely to have issues. Well, that's one of those things that it kind of makes common sense, yeah. So we've got different kinds of proteins that are not all created equal. We need to feed appropriate amounts to young horses. Okay, what else have we got going here with this protein thing?
Well, and I just want to throw out there, because we've got some products on the market, commercial products, that have certain percentages of protein. Everybody looks at their commercial horse feed,
yeah,
and
they've even taken
bases
the
it on
the feed
percentage.
That way now.
I know. I ask
it,
people.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Feed number 12. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, and I ask people, what are you feeding your horse? And they say, well, I'm feeding a 12% textured feed or a 14% sweet feed. Really, percentages don't mean anything unless they're associated with an amount. Same goes for if we're looking at sugars and starches in the diet, or even potassium if you've got one of those quarter horses suffering from HYPP. Other topics for other days.
Yes.
But my point being, percentages alone really mean nothing. So let's take, for example, we've got feeds on the market that I will call generically a low-intake ration balancer. They're very concentrated. They're designed to be fed at 1 pound a day to a 1,000-pound horse, and typically the protein contents are very high, maybe 25 to 30% protein. And that freaks people out. Oh, my gosh, that's way too much protein. I couldn't feed my horse that. And I say, well, what protein content are you comfortable feeding your horse? Oh, probably about 12%. And I say, well, how much are you feeding of that 12% protein feed? Oh, he gets about 4 pounds a day. So I then break down the math for people and I show them, okay, if we have a feed that's 25% protein, but you only have to feed 1 pound a day of it, the amount of actual protein your horse gets out of that is 4 ounces. Versus your 12% protein feed that you feed 4 pounds a day, your horse is actually getting about 7.7, let's say, 8 ounces of protein a day. So in the lower percentage, based on the feeding rate of being 4 pounds, you're getting double the amount of protein. So when I break it down for people like that, oh, okay. And then you've also got to think, even the poorest, you know, low-quality hay, grass hay, is going to run around 8% protein. So if we have to feed our horse about 15 pounds of grass hay a day at 8% protein, that's close to 20 ounces of protein.
Wow.
So we really have to put it in perspective of how much am I actually feeding. And just go back to doing some basic math, and it all will become a lot clearer to us.
See, that's where the problem is. There are too many horse people who are bad at math. All of those.
That's
in the room,
why I always do mine on 1,000 pounds, because it's easy. Well, I'll do a talk and they'll say, "Well, I've got a horse that's 936 pounds. Let's round it up to 1,000, because that's easy for me to do the math on."
Right, right, yeah. And I've discovered a whole new level of how bad I am at math now, because Glenn's pony PT Scooter is like a 400-pound pony. So,
oh gosh.
And everything is labeled for 1,000-pound horse.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Just to put those values that I was giving you, the 4, 8, and close to 20 ounces, put that in perspective of what a 1,000-pound horse needs. Let's go back to the 1,000-pound. Actually, how much protein do they actually need in a day?
Yeah.
So for a maintenance horse that's doing nothing, just an average maintenance horse, he needs about 22 ounces of protein a day.
Really?
So typically, we can get that from a decent quality hay. But then if we look at a horse doing heavy work, say a racehorse, they're going to need about 35 ounces a day of protein.
Wow.
And early lactation, which is no surprise, early lactation, because that mare is putting so much of those proteins, amino acids, into making milk, good quality milk, early lactation, the horse is going to need about 54 ounces of protein a day.
Wow.
So it's really, really critical.
That's a lot. So it's going to matter what kind of hay they're getting.
Absolutely.
Different hays have lots of different levels of protein in them. Now, somewhere I read it was probably on a blog, and this is something that's been floating around for many, many years. You hear folks say, I can't give my horse alfalfa hay, in other words, high-protein hay, because it makes him high. Do we have any do we have any actual research that says that protein in excess makes a horse, quote, hot or high?
Well, let's just go back to when proteins are digested. So when you eat food, you digest protein, and it gets absorbed and then goes into your bloodstream. In order for it to be ever used as energy, it actually takes energy to turn it into energy. So it's kind of energy neutral. The one time that an animal would use protein as its primary energy source is if the animal was starving. And you're literally, so you've used up all of your fat stores, you've used up all of the glucose that's stored in your muscle, and now you're starting to break down your own tissues in a catabolic state to break down your own tissues to try and stay alive. So that's when you'd use protein as your primary energy source. Protein is really not a great energy source. So alfalfa gets a bad rap for making horses high, but really any high-protein feeds. Horses are very good at excreting excess protein. And if you feed your horse alfalfa and he does get a little hot, it's really nothing to do with the protein and more to do with the fact that alfalfa is much higher in energy than most of your grass hays. And if you're not exercising your horse enough, then extra energy can be displayed in hyper behaviors.
He's just going, woohoo!
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Got it.
So high-protein feeds will not make your horse crazy. High-energy feeds, if you're not exercising them enough, will. So this is where I get the funny question. People will say, well, and we're kind of going off protein a little, I want to put weight on my horse, but I don't want him to get any fat. I don't want him to get hot or crazy. Well, that's when you have to really look at the type of energy you're feeding, you know, sugars and starches versus oil. But a lot of extra energy, it doesn't matter whether they're laying it down as fat. If they don't need it, if they're not exercising, they may get hot.
Well, there you go. Now, you said that horses are good at excreting excess protein. Where does it go?
Out in the urine. So the kidneys filter out excess protein, and it'll go out in the urine. So I think there is some information or some myths floating around, and this one is actually true. If you do have your horse on a very high-protein diet, you have to make sure they're drinking lots and lots of water. You may actually smell more ammonia in the urine in those horses. That's not a bad thing unless the barn isn't ventilated, because that's just the horse excreting excess. If you're smelling a lot of ammonia, it may mean that you're feeding too much protein and you don't really need that much, because you can tell the horse is excreting excess.
So from the purely practical point of view, if you have horses who are excreting the excess proteins, stall reeks of ammonia, and you have to spend lots and lots of extra money on stall freshener, would it not make sense that you are throwing some of your feeding dollars away, because higher protein feedstuffs cost more than lower protein feedstuffs?
They do, and you may, and typically it's going to, as you noted before, even with my 8% protein hay, I'm still getting 20 ounces of protein out of it. You really want to look at your hay first. And a lot of times we will feed alfalfa if we need weight gain, but sometimes cutting that alfalfa 50-50 with some grass hay will help to level out that ammonia content. And then adding weight from other things like fat supplements.
Yeah. So my next question is, you buy a bag of horse feed, and right there on the front of the bag of horse feed in great gold letters, 12% protein. It's like, well, that sounds reasonable for my pleasure horse, and it costs you $13.85. And then you walk down the aisleway a little bit further, and right there's a bag of horse feed in great big beautiful green letters over top of a picture of a reining horse. 12% protein, and that bag is going to cost me $25. What is going on here?
So we're saying both feeds had the same protein content,
they both,
right?
They both say 12% protein on the front. Why is one $12 and one's $25?
Because I can make protein, and this is another reason why I really don't like just looking at the percentage, because that crude protein percentage value doesn't tell me anything about the quality of the protein source. I could grind up chicken feathers and, you know, some dog food, and I could probably make you a 12% protein feed, but it is not what you would want to feed your horses. Quality protein sources that are high in those amino acids, like your legumes or seed meals, they're going to be a little bit more expensive, hence the one that was $25 a bag. Really, when we have feeds that are, I guarantee also, if you looked at the feeding rate of the more expensive bag, you can probably feed less of it. So again, one of the other tricks to working out, is this feed cost effective for me? Don't just look at the price of the bag, but look at how much do I have to feed. So what is the cost per head per day? So if I've got, let's go back to the feed where it was 25% protein, they come in 50-pound bags, and I only have to feed 1 pound a day. That'll last one horse 50 days, and it works out usually, when I've seen pricing across the board, anywhere between 50 and 60 cents a day to feed a horse, versus your 12% protein feed that may be significantly less expensive for the cost of the bag. But if you've got to feed 4 pounds a day of it, that's going to last you nowhere near as long. It's going to last you, you know, 12 days versus 50 days. So if you've got exactly the same protein content, price difference is going to come with quality of ingredients, as well as other technologies that companies are putting in feed, like are they adding probiotics? So what sources of fiber are they adding in it? Mm-hmm. Does it have a lot of byproducts in there, or is it
It's one of those things you have to read the tiny print.
You do. And I think a great topic for one of our talks should be going through a tag and going from beginning to the end of the ingredients list and what is it all? Because that's a common question I get. You know, what is this? What is this? How do I read my tag?
Yeah. So, well, one more question about proteins.
Absolutely.
So it's easy enough to overfeed protein. Your horse is getting more ounces of protein than he needs.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, if I am feeding one horse the appropriate ounces of protein he needs each day,
mm-hmm.
which is, what did you say, 8 ounces, does it matter if it's 8 ounces of high-quality protein or 8 ounces of crappy protein? Does that matter in the long run?
It does. And if you are in any other livestock industry, pigs, cattle, chickens, they don't actually look at crude protein values anymore. They're quite archaic. They will actually look at individual amino acid requirements. So a growing pig needs X amount of lysine and X amount of methionine. And as I mentioned, we do have requirements for lysine in the horse. So especially in the young growing horse, it's really critical that you don't just feed them, say, a 14% protein feed, but you're also looking at the lysine content of the product.
Aha. Uh-huh. So if you have a horse, stuff, Dr.
You know, it does get very complicated. It really does. And so people really have to rely on the fact that nutritionists do design the products that you buy, and the feeding rates on the backs of the bags are there for a reason. And if you feed according to those feeding rates, then we can guarantee you that guaranteed analysis. I can guarantee your horse is getting the correct amount of each of those nutrients. If you can't feed that amount, that's okay. If your horse is going to get too fat, if you feed 4 pounds of a feed, then you need to just find a feed where you can feed the appropriate amount. Other things that you may see in a mature horse, if they really don't have enough protein or quality protein, definitely poor hoof and hair quality, poor coat quality. Methionine, one of those essential amino acids, is really critical for hoof quality and hair quality, considering hoof is just hard hair. just generally not doing well. So protein is really, really important.
And that's where you see the chubby pasture pet with a really lousy coat and poor feet.
Exactly. And we know in humans that just because of a certain weight doesn't mean that you're well-nourished. You can be obese and still malnourished.
Well, that was fascinating stuff. You made my head spin, Dr. Cuban, and I appreciate that.
Take-home message, protein's not the enemy. It's very important.
There we go. It is not the enemy. Yay.
It is not the enemy.
Well, thank you once again for coming by Horses in the Morning and explaining some horse health and nutrition facts to us. Dr. Cubitt comes by the Horses in the Morning show the second Wednesday of every month, folks, for those of you who like to plan ahead. So thanks again, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to Jennifer for putting that together. That was Dr. Tanya Cubitt of Performance Horse Nutrition. We appreciate her stopping by. She's very, very interesting. I didn't know some of the things in there, so that was cool to learn. And Jamie, we are Jennifer is going to get our next guest lined up here in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Do you want to do a song, or do you want to do? I have my monthly look at studies show. Which would you rather do?
Oh, Lord have mercy. We may have to do both. So let's go ahead and get started on studies.
Okay. So every month I take a look. I just go to Google. I put in studies show, and I take a look at the last month to see what the scientific community has been wasting its money on over the last month. And this is what I found. Studies show more, and I'm just going to give you the headlines. I did not look into the stories themselves. We just give you the headlines. And the first one is, studies show more people moved to Texas in 2014 than any other state.
Huh.
That's I think it's because, I don't know, they have more guns. I don't know. Or I think it's because they have the cheerleaders. I'm not sure.
That's what it is, I'm sure.
The Dallas cheerleaders, that's what I'm thinking. Studies show young professionals are holding off on business startups. I don't know why. It's just what the study showed. Studies show pot legalization has not impacted teen use. Now, does that mean that they're not using it less or not using it more? Which were they surprised
at
there?
It's a very, very important take-home message, I think.
I don't know what that was about. Nope. Anyway.
I think that pot legalization has not impacted teen use means the kids are still using it no matter what. They were using it before.
Exactly.
It didn't really change anything.
Yeah, they never had trouble getting it. Studies show tasers have harmful effects on the body and mind. Okay,
imagine.
You're being zapped by 50,000 volts or whatever it is. I imagine that's going to have a harmful effect on your body, and it's probably going to screw up your mind a little bit, too.
scrambled it.
Exactly. Studies show coffee has many health benefits. So have you given up coffee, too, or have you found a vegan coffee?
Coffee is vegan. I'm drinking a black now. No cream, no nothing. I'm starting to get used to it. Can I just tell you that coffee and a vegan diet is very cleansing for your body? I'm just going to leave it at that. It's very cleansing.
Ew!
There you go.
Studies show that smoothies do the body good.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. That's a waste of money.
I know. I could have guessed that myself without doing a study. Yep. Studies show that parents' lifestyle. This was going to be one for you, Jamie, that you're just going to go, oh, really? Studies show that parents' lifestyle choices can have multi-generational effects.
No.
So,
somebody gave them money to study that? You mean if your parents are, like, you know, living in
drunk?
A trailer park and you grow up as a drunk trailer park liver, it's going to not be a cycle? Come on.
Yeah, I know. Studies show that people who doodle have an advantage over the rest of us. Now, I doodle, but I'm not good at it. Jennifer's actually a doodler that actually draws things that look like the things that she meant to doodle. I just have blobs. I pretty much have, semi-geometric shapes and blobs. They don't look like anything.
Huh. I need to doodle more. I think I draw little spirals, but that's all I draw.
Yeah, apparently you need to doodle more. Now, all of Jennifer's end up looking like horses in the end, by the way. It may start out looking like something else, but it all looks like a horse in the end. Studies show global smartphone use continues to climb. Oh, my God. How much did they pay for that? I could have told them that. It's going to continue to climb for a long time.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Studies show that listening to classical music can help you ace your finals and help to lower your blood pressure. And I did look, I did read this one a little bit. And surprisingly, they said that it's better than rap music when you're looking to study for your finals. Yeah, I know. It was shocking. I know.
There was all these internet challenges that go around, and it's like, oh, challenge this and challenge that. Somebody came up with an internet challenge to, for 300 miles, you have to listen to smooth jazz. And the guy on the video is like, he gets in his car and starts it up, and he's like, I hate it! I hate it!
How many accidents were there in that study is what I want to know. People just driving off the road into a bridge.
Who thinks that's a good idea for a grocery store? It's terrible.
All right, two more in our monthly look at studies show on Google. New studies show Vikings filled their teeth and had female warriors and that they loved bling. So there you go. And then that's one last stupid one. You found this one. Studies show that cat people are smarter than dog people.
Lies.
I think it's a lie. I do. I think it's a lie, too. I didn't put horse people in that mix at all. They didn't bother studying that. But, yeah, lies. So there's my latest study show list from Google. We are going to go right now to our next guest, and it's a very interesting topic that I didn't know much about until Jennifer brought it to our attention. And we're going to speak with Kathy Hansen, and she is with the AQHA Protect Them Coalition, and we're going to find out what that's all about. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, before we get started on the coalition, we don't cover the Quarter Horse Association a whole lot. We do talk about it because we cover, you know, most things horsey here. But what has been going on with the AQHA, and what's the situation to cause you to create a coalition? And give everybody a little bit of a background.
Okay, well, it started nearly a year ago, actually on the Pleasure Horse Forum, when the American Quarter Horse lifted the suspension on a trainer who's been an abuser several times, and this just inflamed a lot of people. So in reading this thread, I actually posted back and said, you know, there's a fix. You can propose rules. You can new rules, rule changes, but you're going to have to form a coalition to get the AQHA to listen. They've been, in past years, not real receptive to individual members with especially controversial issues. Abuse in the quarter horse industry is still there. It's not being addressed or enforced to the lengths that it needs to be to pretty much go away. We'll always have some. That's human nature. And so the coalition was formed after a few days of not getting any responses. I, the volunteer, said, I'll do the research, I'll write the rules, but I need backup of people or I'm not going to follow through. In California, after being involved in this and reading the hundreds of emails, we have much less abuse here. California's
now,
liberal.
What are we talking about? I think a lot of people are going to be surprised to hear that there's abuse. What are we talking about?
We're talking about at shows where horses are lunged for long periods of time until they become very lathered, hot, just abuse in the length of time. We're talking about a lot of trainers and exhibitors, not just trainers, exhibitors who include children who have been taught to, you know, do too much jerking, too much spurring. It's become a real problem when people who do not even understand what horse showing is about make comments. And there's been a reluctance to have these people reported because it requires a signature of the reporter, and most people don't want to put themselves there. They fear reprisal. AQHA started a stewards program, but it's a peer-on-peer, trainers and judges, and it's just not working. They cannot possibly fund it, and that will be a need that the shows will have to do if this is ever going to change. Enforcement of, they have current rules, but they have no real enforcement. And what our deal is, we want in the rule book the fine and penalties portion. We want AQHA to have transparency about how they handle these problems, which
absolutely,
they don't have now.
You know, as an inventor, there is definitely a lot of different ways that you can get in trouble, either hard riding, overriding, aggressive riding, and all of those are at the discretion of the person who's in charge of all the shows. Now, you mentioned lunging, over lunging. There's got to be more kinds of, like, what kinds of abuse are going on at AQHA shows? Is there soaring like there is in the Tennessee walking world? I know that I boarded at a stable that would tie the horses' heads to their stirrups and leave them there for hours. Like, are we talking that kind of abuse? Like, what are some of the kinds?
That's a perfect example of abuse, and that is not allowed at an AQHA show. And but you have to have people that will inspect the stall areas and, you know, basically find horses that are tied up, tied around, tied down, withheld from feed and water. It's a problem, and it's not being addressed the way it should be. And now it's becoming a real issue in that many people in AQHA, and I get this strictly from the email messages that I have received after we started this, have fled the AQHA system because they cannot no longer look at these horses being treated this way. They also feel it is a big reason for how our pleasure horses now are going in the ring, how they are being trained. And they wanted to change back to a more normal type of movement of a horse, not a robotic movement that actually some people think, even people that don't even know horses, think there's something wrong with that horse. He's not the animal that people perceive, the beautiful, you know, horse loping across the green pasture type. And that's not what showing's about, but we have taken it too far to the other side.
I totally agree.
Abusive training.
I was at a jumper show, and the arena next to us was full of the horses going super, super slow. Now, do you include the halter horses in that? These breeding of these big, giant horses on these teacup little feet that don't survive more than a couple years?
Yeah, I would include that. I think that's going to be even a bigger issue to stop. That's, you know, done prior to ever getting into the show ring. But I can point out to you that having been in this industry for many, many years, that when I started in the AQHA, the two biggest classes at any AQHA show, events-wise, were the Western Pleasure and the Halter Horses. And now they are becoming the two smallest, because people have moved away from that. I mean, intelligent people, caring people, people that still have passion for horses don't want to see that and don't want to be part of it. But yet, it's a lot of the things going on at AQHA and at the AQHA shows either force you to move that way or to move away. And regrettably, in the last 10 years, 83,000-plus members have chosen to move away.
Well, I was going to ask you that, Kathy, because nothing happens with organizations like this unless it affects the pocketbook. Unless it affects the bottom line, they don't care in most cases. And I'm not just saying the AQHA; I'm talking about organizations in general now. You know, the only way you ever get their attention is through money, because it ultimately comes back to money in most cases. And that's sad, but it's just a fact of life. So, what is going to affect that? Is it the membership? Is that what's going to cause that for them to pay attention?
Okay, so what you mentioned was money. So I'm going to tell you what we have proposed. Basically, that's what we've proposed. We've proposed high fines and long suspensions. which both indicate you're going to lose income through the fines and through maybe your ability to not train for a while or at least not show them for a while. So that's where we have gone, because I totally agree with you. Money talks, and nobody wants to spend it on something like a fine. So basically, the movement started kind of willy-nilly, and it has morphed into something that we have people internationally now saying, put me on the list. I want to support this. It's gone better than what I expected. It was a slow start, and now it's building momentum. I think Facebook has helped a great deal, plus, you know, many, many emails that have been circulating. But I think the biggest thing, we want to start with abuse, and what I would like to see is a coalition of the membership stay in place so that the membership begins to again run the association. AQHA is a breed association that has a mission statement which they do not follow, which is to protect the welfare of the horse, but they are a membership association who should be making the decisions and who should be controlling more of what happens. Right now, I think it is more up to the paid staff who are not always well informed and not always wanting to listen. But and it's a big complaint. You know,
all of this is
go
okay.
Ahead.
So, but have they responded? Have you talked to them? Have there been, you know, the coalition's great, and that's how these kind of things start. And by the way, thank you for doing that, because we all care about the welfare of the horses, whether it's the Tennessee or, you know, anywhere.
Right.
So, but are they listening?
You know, it's hard to say if they're listening, because I've proposed a rule change. It went in with other documents. One was the origin of how this started. The other is the argument for. And the third one is the solutions that we think could be put in place to benefit and enforce. They will not respond back. We will go to the convention in March, and it will be put on the floor at a committee. And each committee will have to approve or disapprove. Then it moves up to the executive committee, where even if all committees approve the inclusion of these rules, the executive committee can still either table it or disapprove it. So it's a hard fight. I've been involved in AQHA for a long time and had many frustrations, but this is an important fight for everybody, because we are losing ground with animal abuse. There's rumors or perhaps truth behind the fact that the FBI is going to change their look at animal abuse. I think it's caused primarily because we have great news coverage now, and you are looking at horses in, you know, California or New York dying in pastures because of, you know, abusive non-feeding or whatever. Or now we have the phones that film everything, and it's all over the internet. You can go on to YouTube and look at people abusing horses. It's a sad state of affairs, and you can't cover it up. And it's going to be, at one day, somebody is going to step in with a lot of power, like an organization like PETA, and really give us a black eye.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's coming for every part. Once they get done with the carriage horses, they'll have time for the rest. Let's give everybody where they can find you on Facebook.
Okay, it's Protect Them 2015, and it's a coalition for AQHA members or non-members, because the rules in AQHA's rule book also cover non-members. They can email at Protect Them, which is 2 T's, 2015 at yahoo.com. I'll send them copies of what we've proposed, any information they want. Currently, we're forming a database of people that are just putting their names to the support of this. This rule that we're proposing is really not controversial. I mean, if you wanted to argue against it, you would either argue that the fines and suspensions are too long or not long enough, and basically most of the information coming to me, people would like to see them even tougher. But I think that this is a start, and I think that in the future we can go further and with a coalition. But individually, I think we're pretty much blocked by the AQHA and have been for many years.
Gosh,
this isn't
what?
My first
it's just
time in front of them, you know.
No, you sound really passionate and very knowledgeable, and I'm looking at your Facebook page, and you've already got 2,200 likes. Our friends over at Horse Nation did a story on you guys, so you guys are definitely gaining ground, and there's no reason to argue against show abuse. I mean, it happens in so many sports, and I'm over it. Like, it needs to stop. I can't believe that people can continue to abuse horses like this and to treat horses like this. And I didn't really think about it or know that it was so prevalent in the quarter horse world. So you've got a lot of people that are listening right now that are probably in the same boat as me that are learning about this for the first time, and I'm going to join the coalition, and I'm going to do anything I can to help you guys out.
Well, thank you. I think that's the problem, is we have a very large silent majority, and they need to speak out. We're speaking out. I have no problem speaking out. I am passionate. I have loved horses probably since the day I was born. There is no ancestral horse in my family. I mean, I'm originally from New York and the city part, so it's just something that it is you. And my fear for the horse industry, as I've spent many years in it, is the diminish that we're seeing now, and that it will not be there in the future as it is now for many. And that I really, I dread that thought. And I've seen so many kids grow up in it, and we see no kids hardly. And it's a shame, but things change, and I can accept change. But the horses are our servants, basically. We made them servants, so we have to be their stewards. You know,
the kids thing is across the board. That's not, you can feel a little bit better. I mean, it's not great because it's still an issue, but the kids thing is definitely across the board. All disciplines, they're all dealing with that right now. You know, I think, you know, what I've read is that, and I have, like Jamie, I went to the Quarter Horse Congress, and we happened to be there on In Hand Day. And I could only watch it for 5 minutes. I mean, the horses were so fat, and they could barely move. Now, from what I understand, that has been improving, and the judging has been improving on that. Is that correct, that we're seeing them less fat, maybe with a little more hoof than we did 10 years ago?
I think whoever's saying that, seeing them with rose-colored glasses from my perspective. I manage a nonprofit which puts on 5 horse shows, actually 5 circuits a year, and I see no changes. And like I said, California isn't as drastic. We are very pro-animal in California. It's not really accepted. Some of the stories I've gotten are like, really? That's happened at a horse show? And I'm not blind to it because I've been in this business for a long time. But I think that the movement is not really fast enough or even there. I think that if you go to a local show, you see less of it perhaps because there's less pressures on performance and success. But the major shows, if they have stewards present, maybe less, but
not really.
Well,
see, that's your other problem. You were right. That is your other problem. You can have all the rules in the world, but unless somebody actually enforces it, unless the stewards actually enforce the rules, nothing changes. And you know, unfortunately, most of the stewards have grown up in this world. So I don't know how you.
Yeah.
I don't know
well,
that. I'm glad you're trying. I'm not saying that I'm not glad you're not trying. And it has to start somewhere. And you know, the littlest things. I mean, you know, we have our friend Lindsay, who started Riders for Helmets, that now has gotten helmets on a lot more people than, and it's one girl who did that. So, you know, it all starts somewhere, right? I mean,
exactly. And the stewards program that AQHA has is a farce. It has no transparency. And, you know, I was at one time an American Horse Show judge, which is the SEF now, and I never judged a show that I didn't have a steward. to help take care of these type of problems. And not that it's perfect. There, I mean, even our justice system isn't perfect, but at least it's ongoing and attempting to make better, you know, and we don't have that. We really don't in the AQHA. I have many people come to the office sometimes during the show complaining about an exhibitor or treatment, and I say, okay, fill out the report and sign your name because AQHA requires that. They won't do it. They walk away. They say, no, I don't want to be blackballed. I don't want yada-da-da-do. But so you can't force them. I actually proposed to AQHA that they set up an escrow system where we duplicate the report. They get the unsigned copy. We keep the signed copy. After all, I know the person that's talked to me about it. And if it comes to a hearing, they'll get the signed copy. Nope, they won't go for that either. So, I mean, I don't know how you fix the problem. You know, you can't force people, but you police it, basically. You know, you just have to police it.
You know how it starts? It starts with a few people making noise. I mean, that's basically how it starts. And thank you, Kathy. We're running out of time, actually. And thank you so much for joining us and for being one of the ones who's starting it. I mean, you really are the beginning, and that's how changes start. So at the website, again, just go to Facebook and search for Protect Them Coalition 2015. It came right up when I did that, and I've liked it now. So, and I'm getting comments from our listeners who are listening right now who are new to this issue and are doing the same thing. So thank you, Kathy, and good luck.
Well, thank you for having us. We really appreciate
it. Go in with bullhorns at the convention, okay? Bullhorns, very loud ones.
Yeah,
fresh batter,
right. I have a pretty loud voice. People tell me, "Oh, Kathy, we can hear you all over the horse show."
Nice. Yeah.
Well, good.
It comes from teaching. It comes from teaching all these years, and now I have lots of older students who are not quite hearing
well,
quite
as
well.
Let's hope they have loud voices too, Kathy. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, you don't think about this stuff in other disciplines. We get so involved in the disciplines that we're in, driving, and, you know, in all the different disciplines. And every discipline has some abuse. I mean, and, it, you know, I don't know. She's right. I don't know how you fight it. It just starts with somebody making noise. You know?
Well, I told you about this. My cousin, their families that live in Texas that I got the puppy from, she was really big into the Western pleasure world. My cousin's daughter, super big into it. And she's like, I'm done. Like, this is terrible. So then she decided to start being a rainer. She's like, I'm done. This is terrible. So now she's like enjoying barrel racing and having fun doing that. And I'm sure, you know, you can find terrible people in every sport. So, you know, just surround yourself with some good, healthy, happy people and good, healthy, happy horses, I guess, would be the thing to do. And treat each horse as an individual, not as a commodity and something that it's ABC. This is the way we do it. Ask questions. Why do we do this like this? It needs to stop. I just can't believe. Like when I saw what was going on in that ring, when I was at the jumper show, Glenn, I was shocked. I'm like, they still do that? I thought that was the 80s. You know, like that peanut pusher kind of trot.
Well, you know, somebody has asked. I did have somebody just on Facebook ask me what the peanut pusher means, and that basically means their nose is on the ground. If you see some of these pleasure classes with the, it looks like they're going in slow motion, and the horse's nose is literally on the ground. When they're
weird.
Going along, and it's not natural. I mean, it's not a natural thing for a horse to do.
They look sedated.
Yeah, they look drugged. Yeah, you're right. They absolutely look drugged, or just
anyway,
like they're about ready to keel over.
Let's talk about something happy. What can we talk about happy before we go?
All right, let me see. Happy. You had a story down here that's kind of happy, that of a racehorse. Now, I didn't get to read the story, so I don't know what it's about. I don't know if you did either.
There's two horses right now that are Rolex-level horses. We're talking advanced eventers. And one of these is a horse named AP Prime. And her owner is a woman, his owner is a woman named Leah Lang Gluskick. Okay, I want you to pay attention to that name, and I put this down because I really feel like this is going to be one of the up-and-comers in our sport. This chick went to, she was driving, she was in Illinois and was driving south to go look at a horse trailer or something. And she just decided that she needed to go, you know, go look at some horses too. And so she went to this really, she said it was a tapped out fairgrounds race course, which is where I got Edward, the fairgrounds. I love it. So in Southern Illinois, and she walked in to look at this horse, where this horse named AP Prime was stabled, and it's a grandson of AP Indy. Obviously,
oh, wow.
When you got AP in it, you keep it. So very well bred. And she said she walked into the barn, and they were like, okay, well, we're going to take you to the horse. And this one horse poked its head out of the stall, and she was like, oh, my gosh, it can't be that one. That's the most beautiful horse I've ever seen. And, yep, it was. So she walks up to him. She meets AP Indy's grandson, AP Prime, and they wanted $2,000. But it was like $2,000, buy it now. And she's like, I need a vet check if I'm going to spend $2,000. So she offered him $750, and they took it. They're like, fine, take
Woo!
It. I guess he ran like six times and was dead last all six. So they were like, get him out of my barn. So she goes back the next day and picks him up. And she said she got home and immediately put him to work. He always loved jumping from the time she started. She said that he would drag her over to the mounting block. And one time he even jumped over the mounting block. She was like, skinnies would be no problem. Skinnies are very narrow jumps that eventers have to jump. And she said that she just started him. She's like, I did one beginner novice, two or three novices, six trainings. He never noticed a difference between the levels. Moved up to prelim the next year. Moved up to intermediate a year later. And within 2 years of him being off the track, has now qualified for Rolex. Are you freaking kidding me? This is like the Alisa Wallace of off-the-track thoroughbreds. Like, let's take this wild Mustang and event at prelim. I mean, she just, this is like such a cool story. And she had some saddle fit issues, and she's like, I figured out, you know, if she's going to be an Olympic hopeful, which is what people are calling her in this horse, she wants to, you know, do all the right things. And she's made tack changes, and she's like figured out what the success at this level is going to take. And I just thought it was really cool for $750. So that's one of those stories at Rolex where you cheer for the person because you know where the horse came from. They didn't import it from Ireland for $100,000. She bought it at a track and did it all herself. So somebody to look for, Leah Lang Gluskick, and the horse is named AP Prime. Pretty cool.
And her,
good story.
Her barn is LLG Eventing. Her farm is LLG Eventing. And Jennifer, if you remember right, on Sunday we saw her horse trailer. And remember you said, I don't know who LLG Eventing is. It's right by our house. She must live right near our house because we saw her horse trailer at the end of our road. Yeah. And we both said, I wonder who LLG Eventing is. Well, there you go.
We don't know her.
Now we know.
Oh, that's really cool. The other horse to watch out for is a horse named Sir Rockstar and Libby Head. Not a household name, but she's actually been to Rolex several times as a young rider and has won a lot of times as a young rider, the like highest place young rider. She's finished in the top 20. Do you remember that name at all, Sir Rockstar and Libby Head?
No.
I remember Libby.
More attention. Yeah. So she was just the voted Eventing Nation's Horse and Rider of the Year. Check this out. Nobody wanted this off the track thoroughbred because, by God, he's only 15-2 hands with shoes on, okay? 15-2 with his shoes on, they have to put that. He is now 17 years old, but he is still rocking around in Rolex, and she paid $350 for him at the track. And he's competed in Rolex a ton of times. So that is a good story. $350. So cool. So cool. So anyway, that's another one. Hopefully we're going to see a Rolex again this year. He's getting up there. I don't know how many more times, but I just like that he won. This tiny little off-the-track thoroughbred has competed in Rolex all these times, and she paid $350 for him. So yay.
Well, there you go. There is a happy note to end the show. Good, we did it. We accomplished our goal. Well, tomorrow we do have Mary Kitzmiller here talking about training, especially training the young horses. So she will be with us. And then Friday, Janie will be with us, but you're going to be from inside your truck at a show in California. So you'll be coming to us from there, which reminds me, we need your really, Jennifer, you post this on Facebook too. We need your really bad ads in today because we have to get them ready for Janie tomorrow to print out to bring along. So we need your ads in today if you want to make this week's Friday show. So get on Craigslist and send those ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Really bad ads in the subject line, and copy and paste the entire ad into the email. And we have our prizes, and don't forget, it's the equitymfg.com version, which means that everybody that submits will be entered into the manure fork drawing at the end of every month. And then at the end of the year, that's for the flexin fork, at the end of the year, he'll be giving away one of the super-duper shaken forks to everybody that entered during the year. We'll do a drawing, and awesome. You could win a shaken fork as well. So all of that coming up. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it. Wear your helmets. Be safe today, and we'll see you all tomorrow morning.
Spay, neuter, and geld. Got to throw that in. Have a great day, everyone. I got to go pack my trailer. A little grocery shopping.
Yeah, you got to get ready. You got to buy more carrots for yourself.
How am I going to be vegan at a horse show with all the good food? Oh, screwed.
Not.
I'm going to starve to death.